Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
Thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorne and Cross Haunted Nights Live. We're your hosts, Alistair Cross and Tamara Thorne. Thank you for joining us. Before we introduce tonight's guest, I'm going to turn it over to Tamara, who's going to tell you a little bit about what we're working on.
We have our new solo novels at the editors, and they will be out before too long. Mine is called Brimstone. It's a coming-of-age story that takes place in 1968 in a little town called Brimstone in Arizona. The Brimstone Grand Hotel, owned by reclusive former movie star Delilah Devine, looms high on Hospital Hill, harboring long-buried family secrets that whisper of unimaginable horrors. Horrors that will echo down through generations. Within the walls of the Brimstone Grand, the past has come back to life, and Holly Tremaine and her grandmother Delilah are faced with an ancient familial evil that rages just below the old hotel's serene facade, an evil that won't rest until it possesses Holly, body, mind, and soul. Yeah, it's a great big old ghost story. Now, Alistair's new release, The Silver Dagger, is book two in the Vampires of Crimson Cove series, and it picks up where the first book, The Crimson Corset, leaves off. Life in Crimson Cove has been good to the Coulter brothers since Gretchen Van Treese was staked and her horde of vampires scattered. But when she rises from the grave, the brothers are torn apart, their lives and the peace between them shattered. Meanwhile, a serial killer is stalking the little mountain town, leaving a trail of blood that leads to a truth Sheriff Ethan Hunter doesn't want to face. The streets are no longer safe, nor are the forested paths, for a new and unknowable evil has come to Crimson Cove. And everyone, vampire and human alike, must come together in order to survive. Alistair.
All right. The first book, The Crimson Cove, in the Crimson Cove series, called The Crimson Corset, is available at Amazon. If you're a vampire fan, you might also want to check out its companion novel, Darling Girls, which is a collaborative novel by us, Thorne and Cross, in which we incorporated Tamara's vampires from Candle Bay and my vampires from the Crimson Corset. We wanted to see what would happen if they met, so we did, and the result is Darling Girls. All right. Exactly. Lots, yes. All right. Again, you're listening to Thorne and Cross Haunted Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorne.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thorneandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handles are at tamarathorne and at crossalistair. You can also visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. And tonight we have a return of someone who I think is, I love this woman's books. Love them, love them, love them. Laura Benedict is the Edgar and ITW Thriller Award-nominated author of 8 novels of mystery and suspense, including The Stranger Inside, which just came out just barely. And we'll be talking about that. And also, she's the author of the Bliss House Gothic Trilogy. Her short fiction has appeared in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine and in numerous anthologies like At Home in the Dark, A Thousand Doors, and St. Louis Noir. A native of Cincinnati, she lives in southern Illinois with her family. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Laura. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you all? I'm so glad to be talking to you again. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. Yeah.
We are. And I gotta tell you, thank you for I was just as I was reading your bio, I'm like, this is a great bio. It's very succinct and it's very clean. I almost messed up on it, but I didn't quite mess up on it, and so thank you for that. We get some really long bios that, like, with these things, and I'm like, I really need to practice more before I do these. So thank you for having a nice clean bio.
You are so welcome, and I have to say I practice that. There's one thing I have learned in this business since I started 100 years ago is that brief, and except when it comes to novels, that brief is better.
Right.
Like if I'm reading to a crowd, I don't want it to go on too long, you know, because people, you know,
right.
they can listen to the audiobook if they really want to. And honestly, if people want to find out so much about me, I can just give them my mother's phone number because my mother is happy to share any details about my life with anyone. So they can just call Judy, and she'll fill you in.
We'll schedule her on the next show. How's that?
Please no.
but that said, your very succinct style actually does carry over into your novels. Not necessarily in the length. These are full novels. But you are one of those writers that I particularly appreciate because you don't waste words, and I find that something that is kind of hard to find. So, you know, good job on that. And is that something that you're really aware of yourself, or is that something that editors are like, you don't need to say this, you don't need to, you know, shorten this, or is that something that you really make a point of?
You know, I love that you notice that because I sometimes worry particularly when I'm reading books I really like and I find, you know, long sentences and these fabulous, rich, voluptuous descriptions, and I'm like, oh, I should write like that. Mm. And then I think, well, that's not really how I write. And I write pretty short declarative sentences, right? It's almost like, you know, like if I'm typing and I get something wrong, I want to go back and fix it very carefully because I feel like there are only so many words and so many letters in the universe that I can use that I want to be economical with them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, it does.
I don't want to be misunderstood. You know, I want to be, you know, simple. I'm simple.
And I think for what you do, it's a good idea because the really long, flowery sentences wouldn't necessarily work. I mean, it's great for, you know, 1890s Charles Dickens type stuff. You know what you're getting into.
Sure.
But, you know, I do. I think it's fantastic. And I also want to, before we start talking about the new book, which is The Stranger Inside, I also want to compliment you on the cover of that book. I think it's fantastic.
Beautiful.
It's intriguing. And I noticed in your email, we got an email from you, and I saw the cover at the bottom, and I kept seeing something out of the corner of my eye, and I started looking at it, and the lights, because the cover is a house with the lights on, and the lights in different rooms and, you know, in windows were going on and off. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh, cool.
That scared me for a minute. And then I thought, that's brilliant.
Well, you know, that goes to show you that 50-something women really can learn something on the Internet. And I looked up how to make a GIF, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I took the picture of the book, which is, you know, which it's a dark house, and then the rectangular, you know, sort of orange light inside, right? Mm-hmm. So you see light in the windows. And I covered up, you know, various windows in various pictures, and I made a GIF so the lights look like they're going on and off. And
oh, brilliant. I love it.
I don't even know how to do Photoshop. So I would not look too carefully at the pictures that are involved in that GIF, but it was so fun to do. It was so fun. And actually, the publisher, the British publisher, picked it up and made their own GIF. But I just saw that cover, and I was like, it just occurred to me. I'm like, that I have to do that. I have to do that. So
yeah,
it is a phenomenal
great
cover. I love it.
It is. I have a thing for houses with lights on for some reason. That really turns my crank. I just, for some reason,
don't we
see
all?
Book cover. Exactly. When I see a book cover with a house on it with lights on, I know I'm going to like the book. It's just, and it's never failed.
Yeah.
It's just, and then, so the blinking lights was really, really, that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so now let's talk about the content of the book. The Stranger Inside, it came out just a couple weeks ago, I believe.
Oh,
can you
just
tell
a little
us
over
little
a week ago.
About it?
Oh, yeah, the 5th. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Could you tell
such
us a little
great
bit
idea
about it? Well, first just tell us a little bit about what it's about.
Okay, well, in short, because, you know, it's so funny because most of my books take me a long time to explain. Because they tend to be, okay, the sentences are short and declarative, but the plots are so complex. They're, you know, I really like a good complex plot. This one just, you know, came all at once. And a woman, a St. Louis woman, comes home from a 4-day retreat and puts her key in the lock of her front door, and it doesn't work. So she can't get into her house, and then she sees that there is a man inside. So there is a man occupying her house, and we find out he knows something about her, that he's not just a random squatter, but he knows something that she did. So that's pretty simple.
It is, and it's intriguing, and I always hesitate to ask this question because it's such a generic question, but sometimes it just needs to be asked. Where did you get this idea? What made you go, you know, what would happen if I came home and there was someone in my house?
Well, you know, it's not a weird question to ask because I pretty much always assume when I come home there's going to be somebody in my house. And I have to be on guard for that, so I have alarms, I have dogs. But actually, I have terrible dreams, and I have for years and years, about being in my house and people trying to get inside. And hold on just a sec. Sorry about that. People trying to get in my house, or they kind of walk by and camp in the woods around my house, or they gather on the porch and try to beat their way in like they're a zombie horde, although I've never dreamed that they're actual zombies. So I feel very, I guess, insecure, I would say. I'd say that's a sign of insecurity. And I think Freud says that, like, the house represents yourself. So, that's probably way more psychological stuff than you need to know about me. But I decided that I could turn my strange pathology, or whatever it is, into a story. And so I turned it around. I just turned it around, which is something I like to do. I like to turn tropes around. I like to turn, you know, what you expect to happen, I like to turn it on its side. And so I turned my dreams around, and I had not been able to get into the house. And what I have discovered is a fear that almost everybody has.
To be locked out.
It is. And I think everybody has the strange house dreams. Some variation of it. You know, I frequently used to dream, not so much anymore, but I used to dream that I was in a big house and I'd go into one room and do something and go out of that room and the whole house was rearranged, like the rooms were different.
Oh,
it was weird.
Wow.
I'd get lost. It was horrible. Terrifying. But anyway, it's not about me.
I just did.
One interesting thing is your main character, Kimber Hannon, she has secrets, and we won't necessarily say what those secrets are, but what made you kind of go, what kind of made you want to show that the man knows this, he knows stuff about her? Where did that kind of come from?
Well, in almost all of my books, particularly the last 5 or 6, I have kind of two. I like history. I like a character to have a history, and I like a mystery having, or a crime having its roots in the distant past, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not just that. I mean, it's horrible enough to have somebody occupying your house, but how much worse that they are actually trying to steal your life. and that they have a reason they're trying to steal your life, and that that reason is far in the past. You know, because I think it gives a real depth to a story. And
yeah.
You know, and you talked about Kimber, and one of the things about Kimber is she is not going to win any Miss Congeniality contests. she in fact, you know, talking to people about the book and reviews, and they're like, I don't know if I like her. But, you know, because she's not a particularly kind or generous individual. She's had a very troubled life, and not in a victim sense, but in a, oh, you know, she's a little hard to get along with. And so I really like protagonists, and I like antagonists, and I like them to be as well. They can't be actually as complex as human beings, but I like them to be interesting. I like them to have done interesting things.
Yeah.
I mean, none of us has a blameless past, right? And
sure.
Well, I mean, you all probably do, but I
don't. I,
yeah.
I don't. So, you know, I mean, I've done things I'm not proud of, but I've never, you know, there was never, well, I'll just say there was never death involved that I know of. So,
well,
and
I
think
guess we'll find out if you come home one day and there's someone in your house.
Oh, don't even say. See, I'm scared of that already. Never mind. You just bring that up, I'm like,
get your mom on the phone.
True.
But yeah, no, I find that to be a very, I'm seeing it more and more, and it's something that I really like, and I'm glad that a lot of authors are doing it, because it does make it a lot more interesting. I don't really get into books where the protagonists are, I don't know, saccharine sweet, they do nothing wrong, they have, you know, it's
I just
want to
shoot them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I like
yeah.
Kimber. I like Kimber just fine.
I do too. Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah,
it was kind of as close as I could go without like making her an actual villain. You know, I mean, but you know, that said, I really Kimber, like any good character, I think, changes in the course of the book. And the one thing we find out is the whys. We find out some whys, which is really important, and the hows. And I think the combination of her, the changes in her character, and I hope what is a really fast, compelling plot. I think it's probably the story. I want people to keep turning the pages of the story.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I don't.
Right.
I when I read a book, it's not that I necessarily, you know, I want to empathize with the character so much. I just want to hear the story. You know,
I'm
going to get to that last page. You know, without looking,
right.
Which I don't always do. Sometimes I look, but then I still read it.
Right.
I promise.
So
I
what are your
What
are your hopes for, like, when someone closes this book, they finished it, they've read the whole thing, what are your hopes that their impressions or new ideas or, you know, I don't know, what do you hope they'll think about?
You know, that's a very good question, and I know a lot of writers have great answers to that question because they sit down and they say, you know, I want people to take away X. Well, what I really want when somebody closes this book or any of my books is to say, wow, I love that. I may have to read it again. You know,
I
want them,
I
want them to have a good time.
Yep.
I want them to, you know, be a little shocked. I want them to be entertained. You know, I want the wow factor. That's, you know, that's what I'm after.
Oh, yeah.
And other people, I will just leave the lesson teaching, you know, I mean, certainly, certainly, you know, there are lessons,
right,
there are things you should not do that are in this book.
Yeah.
Yes. There you go. Now, you said that this plot came to you very suddenly, and yet it's very complex, as you said. And I'm wondering, you must have one of those minds that just really moves, really, you know, you must be pretty sharp. Do you... Sounds silly, but did it really come to you? All of your books have. Okay, what I'm saying is, all of your books have these really intricate plots, which is great. I also love your characters, which is excellent. Because sometimes you get one and not the other. Well, with your books, you get both, which is great. But your plots are exceptional, and I just wonder. You said it came to you quickly. Is this something that just? Is it easy for you to do this?
You know, it's not, I wish it were easy. Getting into the story is no problem because what I end up working with is an image. An image comes to me really before the plot. So I had the image of a woman putting her, you know, key in the lock really before I had the story. Kind of in the zeitgeist, I've always been fascinated by the tales of people who, like, you know, are foreclosed on, you know, and somebody will move into the house and take it over, you know, and squat in there, and people will go on extended vacations and come home, and somebody's in their house. And, you know, so that is sort of in, you know, sort of out there in the universe. But I didn't want to do, you know, just a, you know, oh, I got to get this person out of my house story, right? But I did have, with every single one of my books, I started with an image. I'm kind of visual that way, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll have like a whole, it's like global image of just run through my head in a matter of a couple of seconds. And it's the whole book.
Yep.
And getting it back is the hard part, but.
Well, because you can never, because like a dream, you can get up in the morning and you can write it down, but you can't ever duplicate the experience, you know?
No.
So when you're writing a book, you're kind of dreaming, you're dreaming it, and you want it to have the quality of a dream, otherwise it just becomes reporting, which is, you
very
know.
Very good point.
You know,
do you have? I know I get a lot of stuff for books from dreams. Do you do that a lot as well?
I write them down, and what I get a lot from is I wish I got more plots from my dreams because I know a couple people who have written amazing books. They just wake up with the stories.
Uh-huh.
But really, I get more kind of a feeling from it. You know. I'll tell you last night. It scared me to death. Well, I wake up screaming like 3 or 4 times a week, which drives my husband crazy.
Oh my gosh.
Last night I dreamed, you know, we live in Southern Illinois, and I dreamed about a horrible, horrible mid-continent earthquake. And I was in a house and I could see the highway and there were semi-trucks and cars just crashing into each other. It was terrifying. And I just could see a truck coming to the house that I had to run to the other side of the house. And it was also a haunted house.
Cool.
Also a haunted house. Just in case it wasn't bad enough.
No.
Well, and, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention about this book is, you know, all of my books up to this point, my first 6 books, had supernatural elements. They all had ghosts, and a couple had demons. My 7th book was a cozy called Small Town Trouble, which was kind of a palate cleanser for me. I wrote it for another person's series and just had the best time, and it's about a cat named Trouble, who's a black cat detective, and I got to tell you, it works.
Oh,
I
nice.
Swear it works. but it was so fun, and I think it's fun to read too. And this one, though, it has no ghosts. This is straight suspense crime, and I just decided, you know, I still love supernatural stories, but you know, in my short fiction, I tend to write straight crime stories. like for Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine and at home, you know, I did this at Home in the Dark. And I've done a couple stories for my friend J.T. Ellison and in a book called Dead Ends. That did have supernatural and A Thousand Doors. So, you know, I write these, you know, I write these crime stories, and I just decided it was time to turn my attention to see if I could write a straight suspense novel.
Yeah.
And I did. So, yay!
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job. No, it's actually very scary, though. It's I find it's funny because I love paranormal as well. I really do, and I tend to write it. But what really scares me is the real life stuff. If it could happen, that's really scary to me.
Yeah, that's scarier.
Yes.
Paranormal
is
more fun.
Yeah.
I had to stop listening to true crime podcasts because they were scaring me to death. I mean, I was listening to, like, you know, I listened to like six in a row. I mean, like, I spent a whole year listening to these things. And my husband's like, no wonder you're scared.
Wow.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you working on now?
I'm working on a new short story. And I do have that one. I do have one coming out in the Lawrence Block anthology at Home in the Dark. I think I've mentioned that a couple times now. And some amazing writers in there. And I am working on another suspense novel. And it has, I'm just going to say it has a kidnapping with a twist. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. That sounds very intriguing.
Yes, I am intrigued. And as you know, you're welcome back anytime. So when you have new stuff come out, all you have to do is hit us up, and we will happily reschedule you for another show.
I love you guys. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
You are
you're
welcome.
So fun.
We love having
you on. We love
you,
too. And before we do, and before we let you go, can you tell our listeners where they can learn more about you and your work?
I'm so clever. I have a website. I know nobody has one, but I've got one. And it's laurabenedict.com, and I have a newsletter, and I have a blog you can sign up for, and you can even download a free book if you sign up for my newsletter. But I'm also on the Instagrams and Facebook and Twitter, you know, all those places, but I'm especially on Instagram these days because I love pictures.
Are you?
Oh, yes, and
wow.
I love other people's pictures.
We're so behind the times. We haven't touched Instagram yet.
We are.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
We'll have to check that out. We made an account, but then we forgot about it.
Yeah. Is it mainly pictures? Is that how it works? Like you, because I don't even know. Is it just something you post pictures on, really?
Pictures are the big draw. They're the big draw, not memes. Like you, and if you wanted Alistair, you could just do pictures of your food all day long, if that's what you wanted to do.
And people would look at that?
They might.
I would
follow you.
Or pictures of our cat. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Cats are very popular.
Well, I'll bet they are. They're popular everywhere. And you know what? When Tamara and I finally get around to starting an Instagram, well, actually, using our Instagram account.
Using your Instagram.
We will find
you
and follow you.
Yes,
I am going to find you all and follow you. I'm going to follow you, so you're going to have a follower.
Okay. We need at least one.
Yeah, we do.
So, all right.
Get on there. It's fun. You'll
all
like
it. We will. I mean that. We're going to get on there, Tamara. We are. We have to.
We will. Yeah, we have lots of cat pictures.
Good.
Yeah. This cat's always sitting on his head. It'll be adorable. Yeah.
Yes, I have a very needy cat, so we got to do that.
He does.
So, all right, we're out of time, but thank you, Laura, for being on. As always, you are a delight, and as always, you're welcome back anytime. And I just want to remind the listeners
The Stranger Inside is out now. It's available where books are sold, and it is excellent, so check it out. Thank you, Laura, again for being on the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights.
And sweet screams.
Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.